When it comes to birth, there's no shortage of opinions. Everyone has a story, a belief, or advice to share. But how much of what we hear is actually true? So, is a C-section really the easier option? And does having twins automatically mean surgery? And do all births truly have the same impact on a baby's health? The answers might surprise you. I'm your host, Progeny Patha, mama of Mama Magic and a mother of two. If there's one thing I've learned, it's that birth isn't just about the moment. It's about the long-term health and well-being of both mom and baby. And the more we understand, the more empowered we are to make the best decisions. So to help us separate fact from fiction, I'm glad to be joined by Lynn Bluff, South Africa's leading childbirth educator who has spent years studying evidence-based birth practices. Today, we're debunking common birth myths, discussing how different birth choices impact your baby's lifelong health, and helping you feel confident in navigating your birth experience. So let's get into it, because when it comes to birth, what you know truly matters. Lynn, thank you so much for being back with us today. Now, today, you and I love this. I know this because there are so many myths surrounding birth and labor and pregnancy.
Oh, my goodness, without a doubt. The myths and the misinformation are really rife out there.
Exactly. So I want you to clarify it, clear it all up, so our moms can have some peace of mind. So when I was pregnant, there was this belief that every birth needed an obstetrician, right? Is that still true?
No, absolutely not. But let's explain why it's not true and what the difference actually is between a midwife and an obstetrician.
Yes.
A midwife is somebody who has been trained to do normal births. Mm-hmm. And an obstetrician, by definition, has been trained to do abnormal births.
So if there's complications, you mean?
Yes. Right. So if you are a low-risk, uncomplicated pregnancy, you do not need to be birthed by an obstetrician. He is there, ideally, to do abnormal births. When there are complications, you need some intervention. That is where the obstetrician stroke gynae actually comes from. And so for the actual birth, you don't need an obstetrician. You would still actually see an obstetrician gynae during your pregnancy, probably about twice, one early on in your pregnancy and one sort of 36 to 38 weeks, just to make sure that nobody has missed anything, that he says everything is looking fine, no complications, low risk, and then the midwife will actually do the birth. An obstetrician is not needed for every birth.
Okay. So where do we find a list of midwives that we can consult with?
There's certainly a list on the expectantmothersguide.co.za website where you actually can find private midwives who can actually birth you.
Wonderful. Okay. Now, the other myth that I've heard of, and we've all hear, I mean, we hear mums talking, everybody says, oh, well, they want a C-section because it's less painful. What are your thoughts on that?
I really don't know. That is a huge myth. Okay. Yes, labor is painful, but labor is for a very relatively short period of time. You are not in pain all that time you are in labor. You are only in pain when you have a contraction. So you have some pain and you have a break. Mm-hmm. And then you have some pain and you have a break. And when your baby is born, that pain stops, okay?
Yes.
And it's wonderful. When you have a cesarean, you don't have labor pain. Absolutely you don't. But you have had major abdominal surgery. And so you are going to have major abdominal pain for a prolonged period of time, that your recovery is at least 6 weeks, that you shouldn't be driving for 6 weeks. So they're saying your body needs 6 weeks to recover from the seizure. So you might not be in huge pain for 6 weeks, but your body isn't recovered and it's major abdominal pain that you're going to experience. So it really is a myth that a seizure is less painful.
Yeah, it's just different stages of pain and different, but there's pain involved
there's
either way.
There's definitely pain involved both ways, but definitely seizure pain far outweighs labor pain.
Okay. Now, the other myth that we've heard mums talk about often is that, one, if I've had a C-section now, then I always have to have a C-section. That's it. You know, I can't have a normal delivery again. Can you clear that up for us?
That is also a myth. It used to be once a seizure, always a seizure. And that really was when they were doing vertical incisions. You know, when the mum sees the scar ran from her belly button all the way down.
Right.
Because the healing of the muscle layers of the uterus was not good enough to undergo a labor. Okay. And so once she'd had a seizure, she had to have the next seizure and the next seizure. She could not undergo a labor because it was likely to actually rupture.
Okay.
So these days they do what's called a lowest segment of the uterus where they cut your bikini cut, and that is across the muscle layers. And the healing is good enough that you can undergo a labor because of the way that the muscles actually heal.
That is amazing.
So as long as the reasons that caused you to have seizure number one are not present for seizure number two, you can have a vaginal birth.
You could explore it at least.
Yes. So for example, if the reason you had a seizure for baby number one was that they went into fetal distress, so we needed to get this baby out quickly because its heart rate was dropping, that would have no implication on whether there'd be no reason that you couldn't attempt a vaginal birth for the second baby because it was the first baby that had fetal distress. This baby is fun and healthy and good to go.
This is called a VBAC, right?
Yes.
What does that stand for?
VBAC stands for vaginal birth after cesarean.
Right. Okay. Of course. Makes complete sense now. Alrighty. Still on the subject of C-sections. Now, are twins always born via C-sections or do mums have a vaginal birth option if you're having twins?
It very much depends on who you go to as your healthcare provider. If we look at what the evidence says that twins do not have to be born by cesarean.
Okay.
And it was very, very interesting. There was some research that came out in December, so a month or two ago, that says it was done in America, and this very proficient obstetrician who'd done many home births, many twin births in his state, they were starting to say actually somebody who is expecting twins must have a cesarean. And there are many mothers that don't want a cesarean. It is not necessary. And so he actually did his research on delivering twins at home. Mm-hmm. As I say, he was exceedingly experienced at twin births.
Okay.
And it was incredible, the successful seizure rate, the twin rate of being born vaginally was incredible. The cesarean section rate amongst these twins was low, lower than, you know, most hospitals in this country. It was very, very interesting. And he was doing twin deliveries where the twin one was actually a breech delivery, bum first, or whether it was head first. And at least half those twins in that research actually presented breech, bum first. And he was very proficient at doing it. And so he never had one baby that was transferred or needed to go to hospital.
Amazing.
And so it is incredible how many twin births do you know where the babies don't end up in the NICU for observation and prematurity and all the rest of it. Yet somebody who is so proficient at VBACs and twin births can actually get these amazing stats.
Amazing. Well, thank you for clearing up those myths. But now let's move on to how our choices in these early stages, you know, during our pregnancy, can affect the long-term health for our babies. You know, for example, my kids are young adults now, and I can clearly see how some of those early decisions I've made, like, you know, has affected them in some way or the other. Subtly, you often wonder, you know, the ifs and buts and all of those kind of things. But can you explain to us how our choices that we make affect our baby's immune system and their overall health long term?
Absolutely, because what is so important is that a baby that is born vaginally is exposed to a vastly different environment during the birthing process than a baby that is born via cesarean section. So if we think about it, so a little bit gross to really think about it in detail, but it explains it very nicely, that actually a baby during labor is going to move down the vaginal canal. And the vaginal canal is actually going to be lined with vaginal fluid. And that baby is going to move through that vaginal fluid, and it's going to go in its eyes, in its nose, in its mouth. It's going to swallow some vaginal fluid. And that vaginal fluid has very good beneficial microorganisms in it that are vital for that baby's immune system. As that baby goes through the birthing process, the vagina is very, very close to the anus, okay?
That's right.
And part of a normal happening during labor is that a mom poops, okay? It is a normal part. You are pushing. You are pushing this baby out, and a little bit of poop often comes out. It's not going to be mounds and mounds of it because the baby's head blocks the rest of what's in, you know, backed up behind in the intestines. Let's be talking about a small bit. Mom's not even aware of it. Part of the delivery pack there is like a wad of cotton wool, and they just put it over. It's called an anal pad, and the baby is born. But that baby is in very close proximity to the mom's gut microorganisms, the good microorganisms. And so that is the second group of microorganisms that are vital to this baby's immune system because it's taken in. Then your baby should ideally be put skin to skin on mom's chest immediately at birth without being taken anywhere via straight on mom's chest.
Why is that so important?
Babies explore. Right. And how do babies explore? They explore with their mouth.
Right.
Okay. So what are babies going to do? They found their hand and they lick the hand. Oh, what's over on baby's hand? Some more vaginal fluid. And then baby's going to find mom's chest and it's going to lick mom's chest. What is on mom's chest? Microorganisms are skin microorganisms, and baby's going to take those in. And those are the third group of vital good microorganisms that goes into this baby's immune system. Baby ideally then latches onto the breast, and they get microorganisms from the breast milk. And that is the fourth group of microorganisms that is vital with his baby's health. After that,
yeah,
it, for want of a very better description, okay, just for understanding.
Sure.
It shuts out and closes the door and said, you've got the four good groups of microorganisms now. We close the door to the rest because the rest won't be good. If you imagine a baby that comes out as a cesarean, it is not getting any vaginal microorganisms, not getting any gut microorganisms from the mom. It is taken away. It is put in a towel. It is then put on a crib where it might be suctioned, given oxygen, etc. It's getting hospital microorganisms, which are not good microorganisms. And the body knows, taking the first four groups, okay, and now we're getting hospital microorganisms and not the correct ones. And so that is how the immune system is affected.
Yes.
With this baby or in this baby, that affects its path to long-term health. Because if it's got the right microorganisms, you're going to be on a path to health. And if you've got the wrong microorganisms, you're going to be on a road to chronic disease if you're not careful.
So if that having a Caesar is not a choice, it is a necessity.
Sure.
How can moms overcome these challenges?
Okay. What you can do is that 24 hours or so before you go to the hospital, you put a towel around your naked body and you wear it because you are then getting your skin microorganisms and your smell and all the vital things onto that towel. And you take that towel with you to the hospital and you ask them to catch your baby in that towel so that you're not exposing it to hospital microorganisms. You ask that as soon as possible, if this baby is fine, please don't take this baby away anywhere. Put this baby on my chest and I will get the skin to skin ones. And as soon as you are able, put your baby to the breast so that they get the breast milk ones. And most importantly, I mean, to every baby, breastfeeding is actually, it's an absolute gift that you can give your baby because it is so vital for these healthy microorganisms, but a cesarean baby even more so because it's cut out on those other good microorganisms that it's missed out on by not having a vaginal birth. But the one that actually affects it the most and can counteract it all is the microorganisms from breast milk. And so breast milk is vital for this. Yes. Baby.
Now, talking about breast milk, I mean, it's often seen as a personal choice. Sure. But like you're saying, it has lifelong health benefits. Let's go through some of that briefly.
That,
I know it's a whole topic on its own.
That breast milk has advantages you cannot even think about. And it's not about saying it's a mom's choice or it's not a mom's choice or about making a mom feel guilty because she may not want to breastfeed for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's about having the knowledge that breast milk is just so vitally important to the health of your baby. It does make a difference. The research says it makes a difference. So it's not about guilt if you don't breastfeed. It's about the fact that breast milk is so vitally important. We can't actually say that it doesn't matter how you feed your baby because you'd be lying. And actually, it's about making informed decisions. And so breast milk is vital. It affects every single probably cell in your baby's body, every single system is actually affected by the positivity of breast milk.
And for those moms who can't breastfeed for some reason or the other, or their milk doesn't come, how do we handle situations like that?
I think that what is so important is that as vital as it is when you are pregnant to find out about birth,
yes,
you need to find out about breastfeeding, because it is.
Don't just leave it and wait till that moment when baby comes out.
It's not just about knowing that breast milk is really good for this baby and it does make a difference to this baby's long-term health, but it's about understanding how breastfeeding works. Mm-hmm. It's understanding about how your body functions.
And how to prepare your body for that, I suppose,
and
right?
If you understand that and realize that if you are running into a problem, that there are people like lactation consultants who can come out and actually help you, because the real reality is that it's a very, very small percentage of moms that really cannot breastfeed. It is a lot to do with perception. You know, let's look at the most common reason that moms stop breastfeeding. I haven't got enough milk.
Mm.
Okay.
Baby's
because
hungry
I have
or...
heard that, but what are your realistic expectations? What are your goals? What is your understanding mm-hmm. about how often I should feed a baby? And it's also about trusting your body. You know, nobody really trusts their body. And I've heard so many people say, oh, I haven't got enough milk. So it puts you in doubt already that actually I'm going to have enough milk.
Mm.
But if I say to you, when you get up in the morning, do you ever think that will my bladder fill up enough for me to go and wee today? No.
No.
Because actually your body functions as it is. And your bladder fills up, gives you the urge to go and wee. You go and wee, and the whole process repeats itself 18 times a day.
Yeah,
well, true. If you can trust your bladder to work and your breasts are this part of the same body that this bladder is, why can't you trust that your breasts know exactly what they are doing?
That is true. That is true.
But it's about understanding. It's about information. It's about allaying the fears that people on social media and to your face have actually said, I had to stop because I didn't have enough milk.
Yeah. And I suppose it's, again, it goes back to having the right people around you that can give you the support.
Absolutely.
That can empower you and be your cheerleaders and get you through those trying times.
Yeah, because it is difficult to start this new life with this new little creature.
Absolutely.
And life has changed.
Absolutely.
The other thing is particularly about breastfeeding is that put your baby skin to skin.
When you're breastfeeding?
No, immediately after birth.
Oh, right.
And
okay,
leave
yes.
your baby skin to skin on mom's chest, and that baby will latch on its own. Don't try and latch it. Don't try and force the issue. It's hardwired into that baby to actually breastfeed, how to open its mouth and latch on and suckle. But we try and make it very complicated and got to sit in this position and that position and all the rest of it. And actually, the baby is hardwired to know exactly what to do.
That is a lot of food for thought. Thank you. Now, as we round up, I want to talk about, and I think it goes back to what we've been, the thread that's been carrying through all of this in terms of empowering mums to make the right choices, right? Let's look at the hierarchy of birth, right? Who's really in charge? Right?
Yeah, if we have a look at what society says, the gynae is up there,
exactly.
Right at the top. Below him, any other doctor that may be involved. Yeah. Below him, a midwife. And right at the bottom is the poor pregnant mother.
Yeah.
And that is what society would like to convey the hierarchy of birth actually is. But how it should be mm-hmm. is right at the top is the pregnant mom.
Yep.
Making all the decisions, and everybody else is under her.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, if you could give, bearing that in mind, if you could give our moms one piece of advice as expectant moms who are listening right now, what would it be?
Make sure you go to the right channels to actually find the evidence-based information so that you know what choices there are and what choices you should be making. Because when you don't even, if you don't know anything about a subject, you don't even know the questions to ask.
Yeah, that is true.
And so it's about finding out what are the real questions I should be asking.
Yep, and being prepared to ask those questions when you're with your midwife or your gynae, knowing that you have choices.
Absolutely, knowing you have choices.
Yep. Lynn, thank you so much. That was extremely, extremely informative, and I'm sure our mums have enjoyed that thoroughly.
Only a pleasure as always.
If there's one thing today's conversation has made clear, it's that not all birth choices are equal. And being informed is the key to feeling confident, empowered, and in control of your birth experience. Whether it's debunking myths, understanding the impact of interventions, or knowing how birth affects your baby's long-term health, the more you know, the better decisions you can make. I'm your host, Progyny Patha, Mama of Mama Magic, and I hope this episode has given you new insights to think about. If you found this conversation valuable, don't forget to subscribe to the channel. Your support helps us continue bringing you empowering, evidence-based content from incredible experts like Lynn Bluff. Until next time, stay informed, trust your instincts, and remember, you are in charge of your birth.